Hello, Michael. Hello, Ernesto. Today, the question says, is it possible to self-surrender when what we believe to be living is absolutely real for us? How to do when we do not even see the light at the end of the tunnel, in the middle of a dark night, when we find no motivation to surrender or give up, much less for self-investigation?
Self-surrender and self-investigation, which are truly one and the same thing, requires love. Love is the key to it. If we don't have love, we won't even be drawn to this path. If we feel we want to surrender, but we don't have sufficient love, the very idea that we want to surrender means that at least we have some, we may not have sufficient love, but we've got some love. And even a little love is sufficient to begin with. So we can't force ourselves to love what we don't love, but we can gradually, by studying Bhagavan's teachings, thinking about them, and trying to put them into practice, we slowly, slowly cultivate the love. We wouldn't even begin on this path. We wouldn't even be interested in studying his teachings or thinking about them or trying to put them into practice if we didn't have at least some love. The little love that we have is love that is given to us by him. So let us nurture that love and let us take care of that love and, as I say, nurture it. Let it grow in our heart. How will it grow in our heart? By our repeatedly reading, thinking about, and trying to practice what he's taught. What did he teach us? To surrender ourselves and to investigate ourselves. The more we turn within, the more we are letting go of other things, and the more we turn within and let go of other things, the more we will cultivate the liking to turn within, and we will lose interest in other things. So it doesn't matter how slow our progress may be. Naturally, at first, our progress may be slow. But at least let us start progressing. That's the important thing.
I think sometimes that when you are behind this big wave, no emotional wave that you can't, you feel, no? You feel as ego that you can't surrender, attentiveness, all of that. I think that, and include you, are not willing to in the disposition to let it go or help Bhagavan. I can't with this baggage. Anything. I think that the only possible exit, no, is to try to begin to attend only one point. For example, the Ekagrata, no, try to fix, no, to the movement of the spiral and inhalation and exhalation, or try to make, for example, some running, no, to change your emotional state in this moment, to, because sometimes in these black nights, no, or dark nights, you don't want to surrender, you don't want to attend yourself. You don't believe in nothing. You only want to disappear all these clothes, no? And so what do you think about it?
Bhagavan didn't recommend any such thing. If people ask Bhagavan, if people said, Bhagavan, I'm practicing pranayama, is it good? If someone wants to do it, Bhagavan's not going to discourage them. He'll say, yes, it's okay. But Bhagavan sometimes used to say to people who were much interested in pranayama, he used to say, simpler than trying to control your breath, simply watch your breath. If you watch it, it will thereby calm down. So Bhagavan is always trying to bring people away from the more complicated things back to the simpler things. And then he'll say, who is the one who is watching the breath? Watch the one who is watching the breath. So Bhagavan sometimes had to take a roundabout way to bring people to his path. But of his own accord, Bhagavan didn't recommend anything except trying to turn within. okay, we feel lack of motivation. To whom is this lack of motivation? Who is feeling very dejected because of their lack of motivation? To whom is this dejection? We need to, like showing the green grass to the runaway cow. We're trying to cajole it back into its shed. So the mind will go outwards and rebel in so many ways. We need to slowly cajole it back in. What works best for us, if we find it useful to go out and go for a run or go for a walk in a calm place or whatever we find useful, it's up to each one of us to find out what works for us. But Bhagavan of his own accord will not prescribe anything. Even he doesn't prescribe self-attentiveness. When people ask what to do, he says, who wants to do anything? Find out the one who wants to do something. In other words, he finds every way possible to turn our attention back to ourselves, but only if we're seeking. If we never ask Bhagavan any question, he will never tell us anything. Because he in his view, there are no problems in the world. It's in our view, there are problems. So when we come to Bhagavan and say, Bhagavan, I have all these problems. Okay, find out who is the one who has the problem. That is the way to solve all problems.
Trying to go to the root.
So of my own accord, I wouldn't recommend anything to anyone. If someone were to ask me, sometimes I get in this really dark state and I just feel no motivation to surrender or anything, but I find it useful if I go for a run, I'll say, okay, go for a run. But I wouldn't of my own accord recommend this or that. Other than to think about Bhagavan, to read Bhagavan teachings, think about Bhagavan teachings and try to put them into practice. And beyond that, whatever you find helpful, do that. But the key to success is trying to be self-attentive. Because even when we're in the darkest of dark depressions, there is one thing we all want. We all want to be happy. It is our desire for happiness that puts us in that state of dark depression. So where lies happiness? Happiness cannot be something that we get from anything else. Happiness is our own real nature. If we want to find happiness, we have to find it within ourselves.
I usually don't recommend, but I speak about what I know for other people that helps to other people. Maybe it's not helping for these people in particular, no?
Yeah.
Some people tell me that begins to run, no? Or music in his house, mantras, repeat mantras very high, that change his emotional state, and then can become to be self-attentiveness, no?
Maybe. I generally would just say to people, find out what works for you and do that. But the key is trying to be self-attentive. That is the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because whatever dark state we may be in, people talk about, within Christian mysticism, they talk about the dark night of the soul. So people are much interested in the dark night of the soul, and they ask questions about the dark night of the soul. Whether you're in the dark night of the soul or in the bright daylight, one thing that is common to all states of mind is we are aware I am. The only thing that is common throughout all the three states of waking, dream, and sleep, one thing that is shining at all times in all places is I am. So that alone is real. So let us not, the dark night of the soul, these all sorts of experiences may come when we're following this path. But we are not interested in the experiences. Who is the experiencer? And by investigating who is the experiencer, we turn our attention back toward that fundamental awareness I am. And that is what we must hold on to.
Yes. No concessions for other options.
No. Bhagavan made concessions that when people weren't willing to come to his path, he wouldn't recommend other paths, but if he asked him about other paths, he would say, yes, that will also help. Because all these things, they can be roundabout ways to purify the mind. So Bhagavan will guide people at their own level. But of his own accord, what he will recommend, well, as I say, if his own accord, he doesn't recommend anything. But when if we ask without, we just ask Bhagavan, what should I do? Investigate yourself, find out what you are. Or Bhagavan, I find this investigation very difficult. Won't God help me? Okay, if you don't want to investigate yourself, surrender yourself to God. Yeah, either way, it's the same thing.
Yes.
But in order to surrender ourselves to God, what is it we're to surrender? We're to surrender ourselves. How can we surrender ourselves without knowing what we are? So we have to come back to self-investigation. We can't escape the need for self-investigation.
When you're in such a state, Michael, of dark depression or dark night, something like this, and when you say like you leave the bar, all the burden to God, or
yes,
you surrender that burden to God, He's going to take it all. Yeah, wherever you leave it.
Yeah.
So, what do you mean is that like forget about your wanting the situation to be a certain way, to go in the way you like it. Forget about all that. And
the first prerequisite of surrender, first we have to surrender our wants, our likes, our dislikes, and so on. Our aim is to give ourselves wholly to God. How can we give ourselves to God if we're still holding on to our wants and our likes and dislikes? So if God wants me to be in the dark night of the soul, let him put me in the dark night of the soul. Why should I be concerned about that? If he wants to put me in hell, let him put me in hell. Who am I to question that?
Yeah. So you try to surrender your will first.
Yes, yes. So we are least concerned about the dark night of the soul. The dark night of the soul can be a great obstacle. If you attach importance to it, if you attach reality to it, what is real is only I am. That I am is the light that shines in even the darkest of darknesses. Even if you're in hell, you cannot experience hell without being aware I am. So that I am is the light that illumines the darkness. So forget about the darkness, hold on to the light.
Too many people give very, very importance, no, to these states of...
Yes, yes. Read about it in books. These great mystics underwent the dark night of the soul. So if I'm undergoing the dark night of the soul, that means I'm... The only thing that is real, Bhagavan was always emphasizing this, the only thing that is real is I am. So naturally during the course of our spiritual path, all sorts of experiences will come. Sometimes we may be in the dark night of the soul, sometimes we may experience ecstasy, sometimes we may see visions of God, all sorts of things. Whatever may happen, Bhagavan says it's all a manomaya mam. It's all a mental creation. Even seeing God, supposing Bhagavan appears before you, or either in the form of Bhagavan or in the form of Jesus or Shiva or Krishna or whatever, God appears before you, Bhagavan says that's just a mental fabrication, a manomaya mam kakshi, a mental vision. Because what God actually is, it's not anything that can appear in front of us. He is that which is shining in our heart as I. That is what we need to cling to. Someone once asked Bhagavan, if Shiva were to appear before you and ask you for any boon you wanted to ask for, what would you ask for? Bhagavan would ask him, I'd ask him to stop appearing, because the God who appears or disappears is just an unnecessary distraction. It's not the real God. The real God has to be that which is always shining, which is always appearing and never disappearing. I mean, that is constant. Well, even to say appearing, because appearing means previously it wasn't appearing. That which is always shining, that alone is God. What is always shining is only I am. The very Sanskrit word, deva, means shining. So God is by very definition And the same Greek or Latin, the Greek word, I think, divine, and comes from the same root. It means from that which is shining. So that which is shining, that alone is God. What is always shining? Only I am. So that alone is God. So even in the darkest of darknesses, how do we know the darkness except by the light that illumines the mind? The light that illumines the mind is I am. So even in the darkest of darknesses, that original light, that light of I am, is always shining. So since it's always shining, we should hold on to that and forget about visions of God, forget about dark nights of the soul. All these are unimportant. They're trivial things. They come and they go. Whatever appears will disappear. So none of it is real. So why should we be bothered about these things?
One thing that I think that would help you the most, I think, in such moments, is that to have that conviction, that strong love, that you feel that trust for whatever you have been given is what is good for you. I mean, to feel it really, that even though it's painful and it's a very dramatic moment, to have the conviction that you don't know how this is working, but it's going to, you know, in some way it's going to bring about a good outcome.
You can also think like that, but if it's painful, for whom is it painful? Who is hopeful of a good outcome? We need not even be hopeful of a good outcome. What is real is not something that's going to appear in future. Whatever appears will also disappear. What is real is what is always shining. What is always shining by its own light is only I am. So we don't have to hope, or one day I will experience I am. I am is always shining. There's never a moment when I am is not shining. So we don't even have to hope for it. Have to be that. Hold on to it and thereby be it.
The point is that sometimes you don't want to ask you to whom that.
Yes, is the problem. So where lies the problem? Who is the one who doesn't want that? The problem lies with us. We shouldn't be allowing our attention to go outward. I should have been attending to myself, but I didn't want to. That's another excuse for not attending to ourselves. Who is it who didn't want to? We can turn our attention back to ourselves. So we shouldn't even give importance to this lack of wanting.
And these questions I usually speak, no, with our friends, no, that the sequence of self questions, no, mm-hmm. Who that, what is the origin of this I, you know, this kind of questions is only for the moments you can turn your attention directly to I am.
Yes.
It's like a second strategy, no?
That is, the questions can be useful for turning our attention back to ourselves. But Bhagavan didn't even intend us to ask the questions. And I'm not saying it's wrong to ask for questions. Sometimes it may be useful, but he expressed his teachings in the form of questions. But those questions are pointing at what? They're pointing at at ourselves. So he's directing our attention back to ourselves. So the question to whom, what does that signify? It signifies turning our attention away from what appears back towards ourselves, the one to whom it appears. And what does the question, who am I, signify? It, holding on to that I am, not letting go of it. So we need to understand what is implied by these questions. They're not mere questions. That is, what Bhagavan didn't ask us to ask, who am I? He asked us to investigate, who am I?
That is the real meaning, no, of Atmavichara,
yes.
Inspection.
Yes.
Yeah, going back to the root.
Yes.
The root of the problem. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you have...
Why do we go back to the root? The root is ego. And what is it in ego that we are interested in? That real element of ego. The real element of ego is that light of awareness I am. That is what we should be clinging to. Nothing else matters. So we need to be very, very focused and one-pointed to in order to apply Bhagavan's teachings most effectively. We've got to be so focused on what is real is only I am. The only way to get rid of whatever is, everything else is unreal. The only way to get rid of what is unreal is to hold on to what is real. Why do unreal things appear? Because we're holding on to them. Why does the dark night of the soul appear? Because we're holding on to that. Why does this name or form of God appear? Because we're holding on to that. The nature of the ego is to hold on to things other than itself. But now we have to reverse that or turn that nature of ego around to make it, instead of holding other things, we've got to hold ourselves. And only by holding ourselves will we subside. And only by subsiding will all these problems come to an end.
It's how we say to the ego, okay, your best affection, your best hobby is to grasp. Okay, grasp yourself.
Exactly. Yes. That is what Bhagavan implies in verse 25 of Uludhanapati. Grasping form, it comes into existence. Grasping form, it stands. Grasping and feeding on form, it flourishes abundantly. Leaving form, it grasps form. But if sought, it takes flight. That if sought means if it grasps itself, that's the implication of that. It tries to grasp itself, there's no such thing to be found. All that, if we look for ego, all we find is I am. Just as if you look very carefully at the snake, all you find is a rope. There's no snake, there never was any snake there. There never was any ego. But ego seems to exist so long as we are looking away from it, looking at other things. When we look at ourselves, we see only I am. And that alone is what is real.
Thank you very much. Those were very good pointings. Always referring back to who does this, who is doing this, who is asking this, who is not wanting to ask this. Who is...
Yeah, this is what you said earlier. What we need to understand with Bhagavan's teaching is the basic principles. Of all the basic principles, the most basic one is hold on to I am. All the other principles are just pointing us in that direction. All that is necessary is to hold on to I am, to be self-attentive. If we persevere in being self-attentive, everything else will be taken care of.
And so many people say, no, the only that you need is to attend to yourself, to I am, no?
Mm.
But you don't need... read the teachings of Bhagavan. You don't need to reflect to manana.
They are absolutely correct. All you need is to attend to I am. If you're only attending to I am, nothing else is necessary. But in practice, how many of us are attending only to I am? Our mind keeps on coming outward. So long as the mind comes outward, we need Bhagavan's teachings to encourage us to turn back within. If you can stop your mind going outwards, if you can hold on to I am so firmly that your mind doesn't go outwards, Bhagavan's teaching is completely unnecessary. Because the whole purpose of Bhagavan's teaching is to direct us to hold on only to I am. But we have to be practical. Let's not fool ourselves. If we're holding on only to I am, then no question about nothing else is necessary. But when we find our attention keeps on coming out, then Bhagavan's teachings are the greatest aid that turning us back within. And that is the sole purpose of Bhagavan's teachings, to turn us within. Bhagavan didn't come for any other purpose but to turn us back within.
We are like little child that needs that his father repeats again and again and again
Read
your kids, read your kids.
Bhagavan's teachings are so, so valuable because the nature of our mind is to keep on coming out again and again. We need that encouragement. We need that. And we not only do we need encouragement, we need clarity. We need to understand clearly. So reading his teaching and thinking deeply about them gives us clarity. Then when we go in, we get more and more light, clarity from within, And then we understand more and more depth of meaning in Bhagavan's teachings. So we should never, underrate the great value of Bhagavan's teachings. If we use them properly, they will be a support to us up to the very final moment. We are so, so fortunate to have Bhagavan's teachings.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we shouldn't deceive ourselves. If we're attending only to I Am, there's no one to deceive. There's no one to deceive or to be deceived. But so long as we're allowing our attention to come outwards, if we think that we're always attending to I Am, we are deceiving ourselves. Because if we're attending only to I Am, we won't be aware of anything else. So long as we're aware of anything else, Bhagavan says in the 11th paragraph of Nana, so long as the Vishaya Vasanas exist within the mind, so long the investigation, who am I, is necessary. What is the sign that Vishaya Vasanas exist within the mind? Vishaya Vasanas are the seed that sprout as Vishayas. So long as we're aware of Vishayas, in other words, so long as we're aware of anything other than ourselves, so long the investigation, who am I, is necessary. Because the very awareness of Vishayas shows that we are under the sway of Vishaya Vasanas.
And that's why strictly following the Bhagavan's path, is impossible to deceive yourself, because the moment you disappear, you're no longer be there to say, okay, now I haven't deceived myself at this point.
Yeah.
I haven't deceived myself. So
yeah.
During the way, there's no point, because until you disappear, you won't ask yourself that. Strictly speaking.
We don't know at what point we are fortunately.
We will never know how fortunate we are, because when we reach that point, when we realize how fortunate we are, we will be disappear in that. The fortune we have, it is infinite. That is, it's an infinitely great fortune to have Bhagavan in our life, because Bhagavan is that infinite reality that is going to swallow us, so that we are infinitely fortunate. So this finite mind can never gauge the extent of our fortune. If we try to gauge the extent of it, we will lose ourselves in that. We can gauge the extent of it only by turning within.
And when we say that Venkataraman, who left the house of his family, no?
Yes.
He's not a body, no?
Yes.
But he appears as a body in the view of the Ajnanis.
Yes.
It's like in the Bible, when the Bible says that Jesus appears to the disciples.
Yes.
After the dying in the.
Yes.
Yes. It's the same.
Yes. Bhagavan said the tattva, the significance of the crucifixion, the cross is the body, Jesus who's crucified on the cross is ego. And the resurrection, when ego is crucified, when ego is eradicated, what shines forth, the reality that shines forth, is our real nature. That is the resurrection.
And it's possible that appears in the form of a physical body. It's possible to see for the Ajnanis, no?
We can take all this story to be a metaphor, but some people may take it to be literal. It's up to them. But for us, that Bhagavan has explained the metaphorical significance of these things. As you say, in our view, Bhagavan still seems to be a body, even after he died. That is, Venkataraman died at that moment, because the I that was aware of itself as I am Venkataraman, that died. But in our view, that body that was Venkataraman continued. But instead of Venkataraman shining through that body, instead of that ego that was aware of itself as I am Venkataraman, that had died, So what shone through that body then was only Bhagavan.
And mysteriously, the body of the child Venkatarama, where he dies in the house of his aunts, no? Mysteriously, the grace absorbed this body, no? To not create the, imagine, no, that the mother of Bhagavan arrived at the house of her sister or her, and find the body of the, and after know that Bhagavan is in Tiruvannamalai, no?
Yes.
It's necessary that in this mysterious, no, of the grace, that this body was absorbed, and after that, Bhagavan, the grace creates the same body walking and appearing in this cave in Virupaksha, and all the Anyanis creates that this body continues, no?
Yes. You say all the Agnyanis, there's only one Agnyani. But, but one who dreams all this is the Agnyani.
The illegal, yes.
And all, everything else is just a dream in the view of that Agnyani. But within that dream, this lion guru has appeared. And this lion guru appears to tell us turn within. And if we follow the path shown by that lion guru, we will be swallowed by it.
Thank you for you and for Carlos. Stay here and we will see you. Okay.
All thanks to Bhagavan.
Yes. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
See you soon. Bye.
Adios.
Adios.
And who is Dios? That which is shining in our heart as I.
Yes.
That Dios comes from the same root as Deva in Sanskrit. Yes. Dios comes from Latin.
From Latin,
and
right?
That it comes from the same root, which means to shine.
Uh-huh. Is in Spanish. When you say adios,
it's
going in the direction of.
Yes, going in the direction.
Going in the direction.
Not going in this direction, going in this direction.
Yes, yes.